Now that Haiti's presidential transition council is in place, the prime minister, Ariel Henry, has resigned. The nine-person council, comprised of seven voting members and two observers representative of Haitian political parties and civic society groups, was inaugurated at Port-au-Prince's National Palace on Thursday. They will spend the next several months trying to create stability in the Caribbean country that violent gangs have overrun since the 2021 assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moïse. Johanna LeBlanc, partner at the Adomi Advisory Group, has served as a foreign policy advisor to the Haitian government and recently served as a senior staffer in Capitol Hill. She joins us now to discuss what happens next. Johanna, glad to have you here. So, look, at the end of the day, they've got to get a hold of a security. You cannot have these gangs controlling the country, but that also means having some sense of stability. Who can actually lead this country to a sense of normalcy?
Thank you, Roland. It's always a pleasure to join you. So now that the presidential council has been installed, the next step will be to appoint a prime minister, and then the prime minister will create a cabinet of ministers. And the whole purpose is to, one, ensure the smooth transition of the Kenyan-led mission into the country to help address the insecurity crisis in the country, and two, to also organize free, fair, transparent, and inclusive elections in the country that is scheduled to happen in November of 2025. But there are a lot of concerns. The people on the ground are concerned about the Kenyan-led mission coming into the country, and rightfully so, because previous interventions in the country have failed greatly, in particular when the United States occupied Haiti for over 20 years. And then you had the UN mission that came into the country brought cholera, which led to the killing of countless Haitians and left many Haitians sick. So rightfully so, they're skeptical. But what I think, though, with the Kenyan-led mission is that President Ruto has demonstrated himself to be a Pan-Africanist. I think it's a great opportunity to have another Black nation supporting another Black nation and finding stability. But there will certainly be challenges, and I think President Ruto is up for the challenge.
Yeah, a lot of challenges, but also you have all of these conflicting parties, and it's like, you know, how will folks be satisfied that you can put leadership in place that will act from a presidential level, a prime minister level, from a government level to get things going? Because it just seems like, you know, Haiti is in a constant state of drama and instability and insecurity.
Yeah, since 1986, the country has dealt with severe instability. You are absolutely correct. And the country is on its knees. Haiti, something that I think is that's important for the viewers to understand is the role of Haiti in the liberation movement. Haiti is the first Black independent country in the world. Its independence was not just about Haitians liberating themselves from the oppression and suppression of France, but it was also about liberating other Black folks, right? So a year after the country getting its independence, it amended its constitution to make it such that anyone who is Black who were to step foot on Haiti's soil would be considered free. A white man could not own land in the country nor be a slave master. So those sort of laws severely undermined the notion of white supremacy, and Haiti had to pay a price for that. One, the reparations and the billions of dollars to France, and the United States did not recognize Haiti as an independent state for over 60 years. And beyond that, Haiti helped with the independence of many countries across the region. So now Haiti has helped its friends, its neighbors. Haiti is now on its knees, and it is time for the rest of the world to support Haiti. And this is why I welcome President Ruto's mission into the country. It shows solidarity. It shows Pan-Africanism. And I think it's also an opportunity for President Ruto to show to the rest of the world what a prosperous collaboration could look like between two Black nations.
Question from the panel. Michael, you first.
All right. Thanks for coming on and giving us an update on Haiti. I had two quick questions. One is, Can you explain the purpose of the gangs ousting Ariel Henry, number one, Prime Minister Ariel Henry? And we know they released about 4,000 gang members from, well, prisoners from prison as well, number one. And number two, understanding the history of the U.S. involvement in Haiti and destabilizing Haiti, stealing $500,000 worth of gold in 1914, the Marines, and then ruling Haiti for 19 years. Is there a role that the U.S. should play in stabilizing Haiti, or should the U.S. just stay out of it altogether?
Sure. I think your question is two prongs, right? The first one is about the gangs. First and foremost, the gangs that we are seeing in Haiti, they're not driven by an ideology. They're not driven by a belief system. They are driven primarily because of the lack of economic opportunities that exist on the island. And secondly, they exist because they are being financed by political elites, by some members of the oligarchs, and so on. And many of the guns that they use to terrorize people in the country actually come from South Florida. So when people ship cars and cargoes to the Republic of Haiti, they sneak guns into them, and because there's not proper inspections, they end up in the hands of bad actors in Haiti, then distributed to the gangs. So what you saw recently is that in terms of the oust of Prime Minister Ariel Henry, is that the gangs formed a coalition and said, you know, let's work together, let's get rid of Prime Minister Ariel Henry. And they successfully did that. Something that many people in the country, many sectors in the country, members of Congress had been calling for Prime Minister Ariel Henry to resign, and he didn't do so, right? So it took the gangs to play a significant role in the ousting of Prime Minister Ariel Henry. Now, your second question about the role of the United States government. One, yes, I think it is a great idea that a Kenyan-led mission is going into, coming into the country to help address the insecurity crisis. But Kenya is going to leave at some point. Now, what's going to happen?
Right.
So while Kenya is in the country, we have to help to strengthen the security institutions that currently exist. One, the Haitian National Police, severely underfunded, severely lack the equipment and recent technology to fight these gangs. They need to be further strengthened. Two, the United States has invoked the Leahy Act, which makes it unlawful for the use of U.S. funding for the purpose of the Haitian military. No state should be without a military. That's just unacceptable. And the military is to fight external threats as well as internal threats. So right now, as we speak in Haiti, as we speak today, although Haiti has a military, it does not receive any sort of support from the United States government. So I think the U.S. should support the Haitian state and strengthen its security infrastructure so that when Kenya leaves, Haiti can fight and fend for itself.
All right. Thank you.
Matt.
I'm really glad Michael asked that question, because that was going to be the genesis of my question about the United States and our responsibility, if we have one, in being involved in stability. And I guess kind of the nexus of that question, or the corollary to that question, is this. Is there a potential for Haiti to have an international law claim to say essentially the United States has passed legislation preventing support of the Haitian military, but, you know, we go around the world as the world police and give money to other institutions and states all the time, right? I mean, we're funding a lot in Ukraine. So is there any basis for an international law claim against the United States or other nations for expressly disallowing support to the Haitian military?
Well, first and foremost, the Haitian military was initially disbanded in 1986 due to gross human rights violations. And as you know, the United States Congress does not fund militaries that commit human rights violations, which some of us will say completely hypocritical, because there are other nations that we know that have committed gross human rights violations and remain to and continue to receive funding from the United States. But what happened is that in 2017, the Haitian Army was recreated with new entities, with new parties, with new individuals that have not been accused of any sort of human rights violations. So the question is, Why isn't it that the United States is not lifting the Leahy Act so that the use of U.S. funding could be used for the purpose of strengthening the Haitian National Police? But beyond the security infrastructure in Haiti that needs to be strengthened, we need to look at the economic conditions of the country. Many of these challenges that we see is caused by lack of jobs. More than 60% of the Haitian population is unemployed, and about 80% of Port-au-Prince is controlled by gangs. So what needs to happen is that, in addition to humanitarian assistance, in addition to security assistance, the U.S. government must also, Congress in particular, must pass an economic package to revitalize the country's economy and help with the creation of jobs and the creation of various infrastructures such as roads and buildings and ports and so forth.
Thank you.
All right, fam. Johanna, we really appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. Look forward to hopefully some good news out of Haiti coming soon. Thanks a lot.
Now, if you like this type of information, you can support the African History Network a few ways. Be sure to register for the online history classes that I teach on Saturdays, Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understand the Transatlantic Slave Trade, where they didn't teach you in school. Visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We do 1,000 years of history and what leads up to the transatlantic slave trade taking place. This is a 10-week class. We're doing more than 10 weeks this time around. Next classes are Saturday, May 4th, Saturday, May 11th, Saturday, May 18th, and Saturday, May 25th, 2024, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Click right here to register here for the class. The class is on sale $60, regularly $130. We do the sessions live. All the sessions are archived and recorded. You can go back and watch at any time. So a year from now, 2 years from now, you can still watch the entire course. We have the lesson plan here for the entire course also already laid out, so you can look at the content that we cover. We deal with 80 to 100 articles. And I put together this class. I've been teaching this class on and off since 2017. Okay. I've been studying history 34 years now, do lectures across the country, been hosting the African History Network show 14 years. But we look at, there's over 200 slides that I put together, 80 to 100 articles that we'll go through and look at. The 15 books that we reference, you don't have to buy any of these books to follow along in class. I'll show you excerpts of the books on the screen usually. And we look at video clips of interviews I've done with historians like Professor James Small, Professor Kabahai Wathakamanay, Anthony Browder, who wrote Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization, which is one of the books we use in the class. Renoko Rashidi, who wrote Black Star, The African Presence in Early Europe, which is another book that we use in the class. Okay. So you can register for this. This content is PG-13. You can use this information with your children as well. Visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, okay? And we'll post the link here, the link's in the thread of this broadcast. And you can support us through PayPal and Cash App, $THEAHNShow through Cash App, $THEAHNShow through Cash App, and through PayPal, paypal.me/theAHNShow. So we have the information right here on the website as well. This is our official Cash App account, $THEAHNShow, S-H-O-W. When you go to it, it'll say Michael and show my picture there. These are fake African History Network Cash App accounts here that have been stealing money from us. There are a few other ones out there I've identified. I'm still trying to get them shut down. You can click right here on our link and it shows our QR code, okay, for Cash App. This helps us stay on the air, keep doing the research, pay some of the bills, et cetera, upgrade equipment, take care of what needs to be done. All right, how's everybody doing today? Hotep, hey, this is Michael M. Hotep, founder of the African History Network, host of the African History Network show. I'm a co-host, researcher, lecturer, writer, and historian. It is Sunday, May 22nd, 2022, and we are live. I want to come on for a few minutes and talk some about a New York Times series that I saw today dealing with Haiti and the Haitian Revolution.
and also do a brief overview of a 10-week online course that I teach on Sundays, From the Civil War to the Civil Rights Movement and Black Power, 1865 to 1968. And we'll teach another session of that class today, right after we finish this broadcast here. Normally, I do it on Sundays, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the Haitian Revolution is one of the things that I talk about in the class. The Haitian Revolution, the Louisiana Purchase of 1803, those are all directly connected. The U.S. Civil War, Civil Rights Movement, Black Power Movement, we deal with all that. But the Haitian Revolution and the Louisiana Purchase, where the U.S. gets 828,000 square miles of land from France for $15 million because France is trying to raise money because they're going almost bankrupt fighting against the Haitians in the Haitian Revolution. All this is connected. So I want to look at, first, I'm going to show you some of the slides in the online class that I teach. But I want to look briefly here at one of the huge articles that the New York Times has that came out May 20th, 2022, okay? Demanding reparations and ending up in exile. Demanding reparations and ending up in exile. This deals with John Bertrand Aristide, who was president of Haiti in 2003. But this also ties to the fact that France forced Haiti with the threat of another war to pay reparations to France. Okay, they France demanded 150 million francs, which in Haiti ended up paying $560 million in today's dollars to France in reparations for the Haitian Revolution. But if we look at this quickly here, this is some fantastic reporting done by the New York Times. Constant Mayotte, Catherine Porter, Salim Gebrekadan, and Matt Apuzzo. But John Bertrand Aristide, who in 2003 was the president of Haiti, and he was the first democratically elected president of Haiti. He said, this was during a, he was on stage. This was during an event that was taking place. And he said, Haiti deserves reparations from France. Basically, he said reparation boomed John Bertrand Aristide, Haiti's firebrand president, to the cheers of the farmers and workers and students in the crowd. Okay. Reparation, Haiti's firebrand president, to the cheers of the farmers, workers, and students in the crowd. The French ambassador sitting on stage hid his alarm behind an awkward smile. He knew John Bertrand Aristide well enough. He knew John Bertrand Aristide well enough to expect barbs at Haiti's former French colonizers and slave masters. But on April 7th, 2003, the president suddenly started calling for reparations. President John Bertrand Aristide suddenly started calling for reparations. A bombshell that became a hallmark of his presidency, and diplomats now concede part of his undoing. Diplomats now concede that was part of his downfall and undoing. And while he was taken out of power by France and the U.S. government. Now, the French ambassador said we had to try to defuse it. We had to try to defuse it. Yves Godal said of John Bertrand Aristide's call for reparations, calling it an explosive, calling it an explosive. Okay, here's a drawing of John Bertrand Aristide and Yves Godal. So with his remarks, President John Bertrand Aristide tried to excavate a history that remains all but buried in France. long after the Haitians threw off their shackles in the Haitian Revolution in 1791 to 1803. Haitians declared their independence January 1st, 1804. Long after the Haitians threw off their shackles, beat Napoleon's forces, Napoleon Bonaparte, beat Napoleon's forces and won their independence two centuries ago, France came back with warships and an unheard of demand. France came back with warships and an unheard of demand that Haitians pay astounding amounts of money to their former slave masters or face war again. France forced Haiti to pay France reparations for the Haitian Revolution and the damage that Haiti did to France. Well, you were the ones enslaving the Haitians. You were the ones enslaving these Africans. Here's a picture of former President John Bertrand Aristide. So Haiti became the first and only nation to pay reparations to its former masters and their descendants for generations. According to, let me back up here. Okay. According to a New York Times analysis of thousands of pages of archival documents, Haiti shipped the equivalent of hundreds of millions of dollars to France. This is one of the main reasons why Haiti's so poor today. And it's been poor for decades, of course. It shipped the equivalent of hundreds of millions of dollars to France, setting off a cycle of perpetual debt that sapped Haiti's ability to build a nation for more than 100 years. Yet to this day, the history is not taught in French schools. And many of the country's most prominent aristocratic families are unaware that their ancestors kept collecting payments from Haiti's poorest people, long after the end of slavery. Now, President John Bertrand Aristide, Haiti's first democratically elected president after decades of dictatorship, wanted France to do far more than acknowledge its past. He wanted restitution. President John Bertrand Aristide said, "What beautiful schools, universities, and hospitals we will be able to build for our children," he told the crowd. How much food we will have in abundance. Now, the consequences were immediate and lasting. In interviews that the New York Times did, a dozen French and Haitian political figures recounted how worried France worked quickly and doggedly to stifle President John Bertrand Aristide's call for reparations before siding with his opponents and collaborating with the United States to remove him from power. They also had six takeaways, the reparations Haitians paid to former slaveholders. We'll look at that briefly in just a minute. And I'm going to give you an overview of our class because we deal with Haiti and the Louisiana Purchase, the Haitian Revolution and the Louisiana Purchase in the 10-week online course that I teach, From the Civil War to the Civil Rights Movement and Black Power, 1865 to 1968. Because we open with that. That's how we start the class, because all this history is connected. Okay. I'm going to post a link here for the course, you can register for it, because we're gonna I'm gonna teach another session of the course as soon as we finish this broadcast. Normally we do it on Sundays, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but I'm running behind today, so you'll be able to join us in class today. And we do the sessions live. All the sessions are archived and recorded. You can go back and watch it anytime. It's a 10-week online class that I teach at our online school. Okay, now, France and the United States have long said that President Jean Bertrand's Aristide's call for restitution had nothing to do with his ouster, that he had taken an autocratic turn, lost control of the country, and was spirited into exile to prevent Haiti, already heaving with turmoil, from careening into chaos. But France's ambassador to Haiti at the time, Thierry Burkhard, conceded in an interview that France and the United States had effectively orchestrated a coup against President Jean Bertrand Aristide. Okay, France's ambassador to Haiti at the time, Thierry Burkhard, conceded in an interview that France and the United States had effectively orchestrated a coup against President Jean Bertrand Aristide, and that his abrupt removal was, quote, probably a bit about his call for reparations from France too. Probably a bit about his call for reparations from France too. So Thierry Burkhard, ambassador to France ambassador to Haiti at the time, Thierry Burkhard said it made our job easier to dismiss the reparations claims without Mr. Aristide in office. It made our job easier to dismiss the reparations claims without Jean Bertrand Aristide in office. So the showdown underscores how two centuries after France forced Haitians to pay their former slave masters, okay, two centuries after France forced Haitians to pay their former slave masters for the liberty they had already won in battle, the effects continue to ripple through the politics of both countries. By calling for restitution, now it's also important to understand, and we deal with this in the class also, it's important to understand, right? Haiti, well, or on the island of Hispaniola, that was originally conquered in 1492 by Christopher Columbus. So you have the Spanish who had control of the island of Hispaniola first. Haiti is on the western third of the island. Then in 1697, France takes over the western third of the island from Spain. Okay, so Haiti, they were victimized by both the Spanish and the French. But it starts with Columbus and the Spanish crown. By calling for restitution, Haiti, a nation born from what historians call the world's first most successful slave rebellion, struck at France's national identity as a beacon of human rights, and threatened to inspire others with historical grievances against France to follow its lead from the Caribbean to Africa. Okay, they threatened to inspire others with historical grievances against France to follow its lead from the Caribbean to Africa. Now, this is a illustration depicting the Haitians fighting against the French in 1791, the Haitian Revolution. Now, Godal said, we were very disdainful of Haiti. We were very disdainful of Haiti. What I think we will never forgive Haiti for deep down is that it is the country that beat us. Okay. It's the country that defeated the French. He's saying, what I think we will never forgive Haiti for deep down is that it is the country that beat us. Well, that's because you were enslaving them. And you were exploiting their labor and treating them inhumanely, and they fought back. It's not like they went to your country and did that to you. No, you took over from the Spanish, okay, and you brought in, kept bringing in African slaves, and you're treating them inhumanely and exploiting their labor and creating untold wealth for France, and they fought back. I mean, the U.S. was born out of revolution, the American Revolution, 1775 to 1783, against King George III and Great Britain. Even after Jean Bertrand Aristide's removal in 2004, the calls for restitution have continued to reverberate, leading to a stunning concession more than a decade later by Francois Hollande, France's president, who referred to the money Haiti was forced to hand over as, quote, the ransom of independence, the ransom of independence. Since then, scholars have increasingly explored the history of Haiti's payments. Just this past December, December 2021, at a conference on the grounds of the French finance ministry, one of the most prominent French historians on relations between the two countries, Jean-François Breyer, called the payments a form of, quote unquote, meta-slavery, a form of meta-slavery that prevented Haiti from breaking free of France long after independence. He said all French people are affected by the nation's past in Haiti, okay, said Jean-Marc Ayrault, a former French prime minister. Yet he said French students don't learn about it and few officials discuss it. He said all French people are affected by the nation's past in Haiti. He said French students don't learn about it and few officials discuss it. He said it's never taught, it's never explained. And this is largely why France has the wealth that it has today. Okay, so read the rest of this here. Okay, so long, and they have three like huge articles from the New York Times on this. Demanding reparations and ending up in exile. Okay, the New York Times, May 20th, 2022. This is dealing with the history of Haiti. And this is something that we deal with in the class. When I started reading this morning, I said, wow, I'm teaching this class today also. So I said, we're going to talk about this some in the class, and we'll probably talk about it this week on the African History Network show as well. So another article that they have from the New York Times, this one here came out May 20th also. Now, we know May 18th was, right, Haitian Flag Day, right? Because May 18th, 1803 commemorates May 18th, 1803, where during the Haitian Revolution, they adopted the Haitian flag, okay? So that's what May 18th, 1803, but that's why Haitian Flag Day is May 18th, okay? There's a good article on this. It's a good short article from Caribbean National Weekly. Caribbean National Weekly. So if you saw like some Facebook posts from some of you know, or social media posts from some of your friends that have a Haitian background, okay, on May 18th, and they were talking about Haitian Flag Day. Okay, that's what that deals with. So Caribbean National Weekly, now this article is from 2020, but May 18th, and it talks about Happy Haitian Flag Day, okay? And the origins of the holiday, so Toussaint L'Ouverture was captured by the French in 1803. After Jean-Jacques Dessalines and other leaders, let's see if we can increase the size of this. After Jean-Jacques Dessalines and other leaders decided to continue the fight and march on march on what is now Port-au-Prince in Haiti, they wanted to carry a flag that would represent their troops. On May 18th, 1803, they pieced together a design for the official flag. Since then, May 18th has been known as Haitian Flag Day. May 18th is known as Haitian Flag Day. The design of the new flag began with the French flag made of blue, white, and red bands. The white band was removed to indicate that the French no longer controlled the colony, okay, of Haiti. A woman named Catherine Flon, F-L-O-N, sewed the new flag together using vertical bands of blue and red cloth. Blue represented blacks and mixed race people, and red symbolized their blood. Okay. Over the years, the nation's flag has been modified several times, but Flag Day itself has remained the same as the day the nation's flag was first sewn together. May 18th is a major national holiday in Haiti. Okay, so check that out. And this is from CaribbeanNationalWeekly.com. All right, so if we just very quickly look at this, and I'm going to give you a brief overview of the 10-week online class that I teach, From the Civil War to the Civil Rights Movement and Black Power, 1865 to 1968, because this is some of what we deal with in the class, because we deal with the Haitian Revolution and the Louisiana Purchase and show how they are connected. Because of the Louisiana Purchase and the U.S. doubling its territory, this increased the need for African slave labor here in the U.S. But if we just look at this quickly here, six takeaways about Haiti's reparations to France. This is from May 20th, 2022, from the New York Times. This is part of that series that they did. I just want to look at page three right here. The double debt that started it all. Okay. And this deals with 1825. When a French warship bristling with cannons sailed into the port of the Haitian capital in 1825, an emissary from King Charles X came ashore and delivered an astonishing demand. France wanted reparations from the people it had enslaved, the Haitians. Okay, the Haitians. Ordinarily, the defeated are the ones who pay reparations, not the victors, okay? But not in this case here. Just a decade earlier, France had been forced to pay reparations to its European neighbors after the failed military campaigns of Napoleon, the very emperor whose forces were also defeated by the Haitians. But Haiti was virtually alone in the world with no powerful allies. It was fearful of being invaded and eager to establish trade with other nations, so it agreed to pay. Also, France threatened to go to war with Haiti again if they didn't pay reparations. Now, the demand was for 150 million French francs to be turned over in five annual payments, far more than Haiti could pay. So France pushed Haiti to take a loan from a group of French banks to start paying. That Sisyphean weight came to be known as the double debt. Haiti had to pay France, and then Haiti had to pay back the loan to a group of French banks. Now, the true cost to Haiti then and today, the New York Times tracked each payment Haiti made over the course of 64 years. In all, the payments added up to about $560 million in today's dollars. But the loss to Haiti cannot just be measured by adding up how much was paid to France. and to outside lenders over the years. Okay, the loss to Haiti cannot just be measured by adding up how much was paid to France and to outside lenders over the years. Every franc ship or ship from France, French ship, every franc ship, I'm sorry, back up. They're talking about their monetary system. They're talking about their currency, francs. Okay, every franc shipped across the Atlantic took to an overseas bank vault was a franc not circulating among Haiti's farmers, laborers, and merchants. Every franc shipped, the French currency, across the Atlantic to an overseas bank, a European bank, a French bank, was a franc not circulating among Haiti's farmers, laborers, and merchants, or not being invested in bridges, schools, or factories. The sort of expenditures that help nations become nations that enable them to prosper. Now, after reviewing thousands of pages of archival documents, some centuries old, and consulting with 15 of the world's leading economists, the New York Times correspondents calculated, their correspondents for the New York Times calculated that the payments to France cost Haiti from $21 billion to $115 billion in lost economic growth over time, okay? After consulting with 15 of the world's leading economists, their correspondents, New York Times correspondents, calculated that the payments to France that Haiti was forced to make cost Haiti from $21 billion to $115 billion in lost economic growth over time. That is as much as 8 times the size of Haiti's entire economy in 2020. Neocolonialism through debt is how Thomas Piketty, I think that's how you Piketty, one of the economists we spoke with, put it. This drain has totally disrupted the process of state building, he said. Neocolonialism through debt. And that was only the beginning. The double debt helped push Haiti into a cycle of debts that hobbled the country for more than 100 years. And that was only the beginning. The double debt helped push Haiti into a cycle of debts that hobbled the country for more than 100 years. Okay, so you can read the rest of this because they talk about the French banks. And oh, this right here, the French bank that struck gold, right? The French government sapped Haiti with its demand for reparations, okay? But in later years, the French approached Haiti with a different tactic, the outstretched hand of business, of a business partner. After half a century of crushing payments tied to the double debt, Haitians celebrated the news that at last the country would have its own national bank. Okay, would have its own national bank. But the sort of institution that in Europe had financed railroads and factories. Okay. However, the National Bank of Haiti was Haitian in name only. It was a of Credit Industriel et Commercial, which was a Paris based bank, commonly known as CIC, and its investors. It was actually a Paris-based bank, commonly known as CIC, and its investors. They controlled Haiti's national bank from Paris and took a commission on nearly every transaction the Haitian government made. Okay, now, if we go to, hold on, it's just... just one quick thing I want to show you here, looking at this article, page 8. Okay, this right here. U.S. treated Haiti like a cash register because the Marines invaded in 1915. Okay, here's a picture over here. The American military in Haiti in 1915. Okay, the U.S. treated. Where is that here? Okay, it's right below the picture. There we go. The U.S. treated Haiti like a cash register when the American military invaded Haiti in the summer of 1915. So this is during World War One, which is 1914 to 1918, but the U.S. doesn't get involved in World War One till 1970. Okay, and this is at the beginning of the Great Migration of African Americans migrating from the South up north and out west. Okay, so when the American military invaded Haiti summer of 1915, the official explanation was that Haiti was too poor and too unstable to be left on its own devices. The official explanation was that Haiti was too poor and too unstable to be left to its own devices. U.S. Secretary of State Robert Lansing made little effort to mask his contempt for the African race, quote unquote African race, casting the occupation as a civilizing mission intended to end, quote, anarchy, savagery, and oppression, end quote. But a hint of other motives had come the winter before when a small team of Marines entered Haiti's National Bank and strolled out with $500,000 in gold. A hint of other motives had come the winter before when a small team of Marines, U.S. Marines, entered Haiti's National Bank and walked out with $500,000 in gold from Haiti's National Bank. Within days, it was in the vault of a Wall Street bank. Now, quote, the general who led the U.S. forces in Haiti said years later, describing himself as a racketeer for capitalism. He said, I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues. Now, National City Bank was the predecessor of Citigroup Bank. National City Bank was the predecessor of Citigroup Bank, and along with other powers on Wall Street, it pushed Washington to seize control of Haiti and its finances. Washington, D.C. It pushed Washington, D.C. to seize control of Haiti and its finances, according to decades of diplomatic correspondence, financial reports, and archival records reviewed by the New York Times. For decades to come, the United States was the dominant power in Haiti, dissolving parliament at gunpoint, killing thousands, and shipping a big portion of Haiti's earnings to bankers in New York City, while the farmers who helped generate the profits often lived near starvation. Some historians cite tangible gains for Haiti during the U.S. occupation, like hospitals, 800 miles of roads, and a more efficient civil service. But they also point to the American use of forced labor, with soldiers, U.S. soldiers tying up workers in ropes, making Haitians build roads for no pay and shooting those who tried to flee, and shooting those who tried to flee. For a decade, a quarter of Haiti's total revenue went to paying debts controlled by National City Bank here in the U.S., which became Citigroup Bank, and its affiliates, according to nearly two dozen annual reports prepared by American officials and reviewed by the New York Times. At times, the American officers who controlled Haiti's finances spent more of its money paying their own salaries and expenses than on public health for the entire country of about 2 million people. Okay, so read the rest of this piece here. Because this, I printed this up. This is 12 pages. Okay, that was on page 7 and 8. The U.S. treated Haiti like a cash register. That was on page 7 and 8. Okay, this is part of this huge series that the New York Times just released. 6 takeaways about Haiti's reparations to France. How did the modern world's most successful slave revolt give birth to a desperately poor nation? Here is a summary of what a team of New York Times correspondents found out. Now, if you like this type of information, you can support the African History Network a few ways. Be sure to register for the online history classes that I teach on Saturdays, Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understand the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. Visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We do a thousand of years of history and what leads up to the transatlantic slave trade taking place. This is a 10-week class. We're doing more than 10 weeks this time around. Next classes are Saturday, May 4th, Saturday, May 11th, Saturday, May 18th, and Saturday, May 25th, 2024, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Click right here to register here for the class. The class is on sale $60, regularly $130. We do the sessions live. All the sessions are archived and recorded. You can go back and watch at any time. So a year from now, 2 years from now, you can still watch the entire course. We have the lesson plan here for the entire course also already laid out, so you can look at the content that we cover. We deal with 80 to 100 articles, and I put together this class. I've been teaching this class on and off since 2017, okay? I've been studying history 34 years now, do lectures across the country, been hosting the African History Network show 14 years, but we look at, there's over 200 slides that I put together, 80 to 100 articles that we'll go through and look at, the 15 books that we reference. You don't have to buy any of these books to follow along in class. I'll show you excerpts of the books on the screen usually. And we look at video clips of interviews I've done with historians like Professor James Small, Professor Kabahai Wapakamane, Anthony Browder, who wrote Non-Valley Contributions to Civilization, which is one of the books we use in the class, Renoko Rashidi, who wrote Black Star, The African Presence in Early Europe, which is another book that we use in the class, okay? So you can register for this. This content is PG-13. You can use this information with your children as well. Visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, okay? And we'll post the link here, the link's in the thread of this broadcast. And you can support us through PayPal and Cash App, $THEAHNShow through Cash App, $THEAHNShow through Cash App and through PayPal, paypal.me/theAHNShow. So we have the information right here on our website as well. This is our official Cash App account, $THEAHNShow, S-H-O-W. When you go to it, to say Michael and show my picture there. These are fake African History Network Cash App accounts here that have been stealing money from us. There are a few other ones out there I've identified. I'm still trying to get them shut down. You can click right here on our link and it shows our QR code, okay, for Cash App. This helps us stay on the air, keep doing the research, pay some of the bills, et cetera. Upgrade equipment, take care of what needs to be done.